Pinecast. Joining me today, I have Alex. You can follow him on Twitter at @_Beck_. And joining us from Germany, we have Mr. Stefan Butzko. You follow him on Twitter at @BVBAwesome and check him out on the Yellow Wall podcast, the one and only BVB podcast in the world. Welcome, Stefan.
Hello. Yeah, it's sadly only the one and only podcast in the world. It's not even the German one, which is a bit of a shame. But what you're going to do, at least the English people have something to listen to.
Yeah, there you go. We're number one. You're the best and the worst. So enjoy it. Yeah. Relish.
We're getting the title for best podcast and get relegated at the same time.
Right. Every year. And joining us is Alex from Norway. How you doing, man?
Very well, thank you.
Feeling good after our weekend defeat of those pretenders?
I feel fantastic.
That's good. Got a lot of good stuff to talk about. We have a big match coming up midweek in the Champions League with two teams in good form. Let's start with you, Stefan. Let's talk about the match on Friday, Dortmund at home against Stuttgart, a 6-1 victory.
Yeah. You're not going to like what I'm going to say because Stuttgart in the first 50 minutes or so, they really pressed us high, and even managed to score a goal over a set piece. But then, Dortmund came back into the game and, outpaced them for a bit. And, after halftime, it was 2-1 for us. And shortly, like 10, 15 minutes after in the second half, Lewandowski scored twice, and then the thing what you're not going to like to hear happened is that Stuttgart completely, stepped
fucking
off the gas.
Over. Yeah.
They completely capitulated in this game, and Dortmund, had an easy day and destroyed them even more, even though they hadn't really had to make an effort. And it was, I think, Wenger called it a good friendly, and that's basically what it was for us.
Fucking bastards.
Yeah, those fucking bastards. And usually Stuttgart is our boogie team, and they play very physical, and usually they break the face of at least one player. Last year it was Schmelzer, the year before was Benner. So yeah. this time they completely said, you can have the ball. This was the most atrocious play I've ever seen from a back line.
Let me talk about that pass.
Dortmund is a team that plays transition football, that everybody knows, and you can't, as a defender, it doesn't matter if you're fullback or a center back, just pass it in the center to, Mkhitaryan or Schein or whatnot. You're going to counterattack them and rip the part, immediately. And Dortmund had like 10, 15 good sprinting runs at them, and I think six goals landed in, and Just an easy day, and what you're gonna hate even more as an Arsenal fan is that we played it on Friday, which means we had an extra day to rest. And
The Bundesliga doing you guys extra favors again. I mean, it's beautiful. If it was my team that got the extra day of rest, I'd be pretty excited about it.
We actually need it.
You could use extra rest, but I mean, who couldn't?
And you had
no midweek match last week also. So.
No, of course not, because we don't have any Mickey Mouse trophies. Come on, seriously.
We don't give a fuck about the Mickey Mouse Cup either, right? As you can tell.
Yeah, as I could tell, you were completely counterattacked and ripped apart by the Schalke beaters. But let's not talk about too much about Arsenal Chelsea.
We don't need to talk too much about that. We can move on from there. So it was a comprehensive victory. Lewandowski got a hat trick. That was fine. Man, great goal from Royce also. Right after he missed a gilt-edged, I think that ball went through, and I was lamenting what he did. I was like, how the fuck did Royce let that get away from him? And then you could tell it pissed him off, because the next thing he did was just drive up towards the box and buried one in the far corner. Hopefully they got all those goals in on Friday, and that'll hold them over for a little while. Ideally, not so much tomorrow. But you guys clearly go into the match with many a player in fine form. The team is firing. all of your players have come in and done a good job. Mkhitaryan looks good. Royce is playing well. You know, obviously a hat trick from Lewandowski. It's certainly much easier playing against Stuttgart center backs than a guy like Koscielny, but it's good work from them.
Yeah, of course, of course. On you know, players on form like Hummels, who's out, you know, just learned that Mats Hummels is out. Hummels is out for the game, and as everyone knows, he's our playmaker from the back, which means against Arsenal, Dortmund will have a bit more or less, you know, wing play, trying to play over fullbacks because he usually cuts open other opponents with a straight line passes through the middle, but those won't come as much as
be lacking some distribution.
That's one thing, Arsenal don't have to worry about covering Hummels because sometimes opposition players are man-marking him because he's that good with street distribution. But it's a bit of a bummer. But then again, Schein is in great form, and Sokratis, who will come in, isn't really worse. You know, we had Felipe Santana as our third center back who went to Schalke.
Yeah.
Last year, and he was always like, yeah, okay, he's the best second choice in the whole league, but now he's not, because A, he's second choice at Schalke, and B, Sokratis is a great defender, and he's very short, to the first team. And the thing with him is maybe his distribution isn't as great as Hummels, but he doesn't really. Can I say this? Fuck around.
Yes, you can say. This is the Pinecast. You say whatever the fuck you want.
All right. He's a
no nonsense defender.
No, there is completely no nonsense. Of course, he makes errors sometimes, like every defender does from time to time. But his error rate is very low because, you know, he just knocks it on the stand if it has to be, and he won't fumble around with the ball and dribble and I don't know attempt whatever Ateta was it or. Who lost the ball before the 1-0 in the first leg?
Yeah.
No, he just will you know, scrap it away if it has to.
Right. Well, let's get to after you guys' little exhibition on Friday. Arsenal had the task of facing a Liverpool side who many of us don't really consider to be that great, but they were or are pretenders as contenders for the Premier League. They were in second place going into the match. They were ahead of Chelsea on goal difference prior to the match. Alex, what did you feel about Liverpool? What do you think about the team display from Arsenal?
I thought when the game started, everyone was nervy.
Why? It's fucking Liverpool.
Yeah, I know, but because of their form, because of the whole SAS bullshit, because of Suarez and Sturridge scoring 10 goals in 8 games and whatnot, because of how they destroyed West Brom, everyone felt nervous. But after 15, 20 minutes, we were at home. We began to play, and they found it hard to deal with us. We made Suarez, we limited Suarez, and we limited Sturridge. And you could see that he had flashes of brilliance, and he still wouldn't hit the target. And I know we scored two goals, but I was really, really happy with our defensive play. I was really happy with Arteta, with Sanya, with Kieran, Koscielny. It was a really good, strong performance. Even Szczesny had a good game.
Yeah, it was a pretty solid defensive performance, you have to say. Very organized at the back. I thought we had really good team play, you know, in terms of we really moved the ball around really well. I really like what we see from Rzycki. You know, even he... Many people argue he doesn't do so well in the wing. But, yeah, but, I mean, the fluidity that he has with our midfield and the understanding, you know, the class of his, you know, he hasn't lost that class. You know, he still has that touch and that work rate. And, yeah, man, it's exciting. I thought it was big that I said that this was probably Mesut Ozil's worst match as a Gunner. I know, you know, he got an assist in the end, but – It was one of those stumble upon an assist, right? Like here's a ball and then make something out of nothing. So it was a bit fortuitous, I would think. I've never seen him miss control and have such a loose first touch before. You know, he let a couple balls roll out of bounds, and it's just like – but there's something to be taken from that, right? I mean, you look at him having potentially his worst game for us, and you have to say that and missing Flamini, it's actually a big statement that, you know, this Arsenal team that's been together for a couple seasons really, you know, won this match without the influence of their star new playmaker and their new defensive stalwart. You know, that really this is the team of old, you know, the established Arsenal team that got together and gave this performance.
Yeah, I really agree with that. I mean, we saw that not only did Ozil have like one of his worst games, I think, but Giroud missed one or two chances to score and put us ahead, and we still found other ways to get back in the match and to win and to grind it out. And even when we were 2-0 up, we weren't, like we've seen a couple of years ago, we suddenly give up, we make more mistakes. We didn't this time. You know, we didn't have with play, we didn't have wingers to pass the ball to, but we still found space in their flanks, and we still found ways to get up in the whole game. And I really liked that performance. And like, also like, Sanya and Jenkinson were making really good like tactical fouls, and we're not very used to seeing that.
I love it. Yeah, maybe Flamini's been teaching them on the training ground, because they both had those great cynical tackles. You know, I think some Liverpool fans were crying, asking, saying that Sanya should have been sent off. I'm like, you're a fucking idiot. Like, what do you know about football? It's a tactical foul. He's not the last man. It is a clear yellow card, and that's all there is to it. You know, and
then special foul.
Jenkinson just yanking him down by his shoulder just made me laugh. But it's brilliant, right? In that situation, you know, you're inside 10 minutes left. You don't want to give up something. Yeah, take the fucking yellow. That's what you're on there for, right? And that's what we put him on there for, was to stop their play.
Yeah, and before the game, it was a Sunday game on Sky Sports News. Jamie Redknapp, he spent the entire pre-build for the game basically saying Arteta wasn't good enough, not as good as Flamini. And then Arteta had that game, and basically people have to understand, I mean, especially pundits, have to understand that both Arteta and Flamini have different strengths they bring to Arsenal.
Right.
And Arsenal fans can appreciate both. They don't have to have one over the other. For some games, Arteta will be better. For other games, Flamini will be better. And instead of like trying to say he's better, like we appreciate both.
It reminds me of the days of when we had Gilberto and Edu, you know, and
yeah, it's kind of exactly.
Like a different look for different opponents. Occasionally, you play together. Yeah. There's a lot to be said from that. I thought our, you know, especially with lacking width that we have right now, you know, with no real true wingers on the pitch. The attacking movement of our fullbacks has been very key, you know, and we've seen, you know, Gibbs and Sanya do bomb forward quite well. You know, their crossing could leave something to be desired, but we got our first goal from a Sanya cross, you know, and it was really
surprising and amazing.
It was amazing. And you know what? Here's the thing. Some people take that goal for granted, but honestly, the technique, it's so easy for Santi to have screwed up that shot. You know, but if you look at it, you know, slow motion or watch it in replay, you know, you see him follow up his header. He heads it off of a cross from Sanya off the bounce, a very good header to his credit, to a man who, you know, obviously being the size of a chipmunk doesn't get very many headers. But he follows it up and you watch his body positioning, you know, and for me, that's one thing I watch very closely. You look at the technique, and, you know, many a player would lean back or not get his body in the correct position to strike that ball. You know, he had to hit it first time on the bounce. While, you know, if he had tried to take a touch, his window of opportunity would have closed. And he gets everything right? He gets his body turned, the positioning's right, and it strikes the ball cleanly perfectly into the spot. And the thing is with him, you know, if anyone's going to do it correctly, he's going to do it, you know? And so it was beautiful to see him get his first goal. Of the season. It's an encouraging sight. Were you able to watch the match this weekend, Stefan?
Yeah, I was. I was rooting for Liverpool just for the sake of them giving you a good feisty match.
Well, they did a better job than fucking Stuttgart did.
Yeah, one thing I was happy about, and the other thing I was happy about was that you guys fielded a good first 11 team that you would play in the Champions League, so you don't get all rested, you know, because you play on Saturday and whatnot. But the thing is, when I watched Rooting for Liverpool, I find, you know, you just said how good your defensive, you know, performance was, but I actually thought, well, there were a few gaps, you know. I always watch with an eye of what Dortmund can exploit, of course, and, you know, I thought there were so many gaps Liverpool just, you know, failed to exploit because they just don't have the pace. They just don't find the run and the pass, you know. Liverpool just doesn't... They are not fun to watch at the moment. I don't think they're...
When was the last time Liverpool were fun to watch? When they had Torres?
I don't know.
Maybe when Torres was there because he was scoring out of nothing. I don't think they were playing that great of football.
This is quite honest. But what I thought of Liverpool was that the transition play was completely, you know, boring and dull. And, you know, they don't press well. You know, Aaron Rodgers came out before the season. Oh, yeah, we're going to play like Dortmund, whatnot. You know, but if I watch them play football, I don't see any similarities. So, yeah, as you said, they're a bit of a pretender for a second. You know, they're not going to be there for too long.
I'd take them beating Man United to a Champions League spot, though.
Yeah, I hope so, because...
effectively, they could.
That this increases the chances of Kagawa coming back to us, which you know when he wants.
Oh, I think Kagawa is definitely going back to. I think Kagawa is coming back in January.
I hope so. When once he's back through the Nuri Shrine rehabilitation program,
then I can break out my Kagawa kit. See, I remember getting, you know, I am people that listen to the podcast know I'm an admirer of BVB also. I remember a couple seasons ago getting a Kagawa kit because I thought he would be the one that would stay, because I thought about getting a Goetze kit, but I'm like, oh, he's going to fuck off and he's going to go to United or something. And then Kagawa
didn't you get a Grosskreutz kit for fuck's sake?
Yeah, you're right. That's what I should have done. That's what I should have done, is get a Grosskreutz, because that's the only one that would have been safe. But yeah, I really love the way Kagawa played. And he's been completely wasted at United. And like Moyes is going to be the one that's going to come in and realize his potential. Fucking idiot.
Moyes keeps saying, I need to get to know my players. Now, what kind of fucking manager? 3 months with a player, keeps saying the same thing over and over again. Yeah. I need to get to know my
players. Well, actually, maybe he got to know his players a bit better now. And how is it pronounced? Januzzi?
Januzzi.
Januzaj, right? Yeah.
I never trust the English pronunciation because they fuck up everything intentionally.
Anyway, you know, he got promised a number 10 role because Moyes came on like, oh yeah, I think he is a proper lad for the hole. He's gonna play in the hole.
He's just trying to convince him to sign a contract.
Yeah, whatever. Anyway, if he's trying, you know, it's sending out signals to the little Japanese man right next to him, who is trying to get to a World Cup. So if Kagawa maybe comes into January, that will be fucking awesome for us, because, you know, he's Champions League cap and whatnot, so he can't help us there. But for the league and for the cup and whatnot, that will be brilliant.
So Lewandowski Kagawa swap in January, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I would. Don't fucking, you know, do it. I would, but sadly Lewandowski has all the say in this. So if you're following the English league and you like to buy in all these, you know, Daily Mail, Mirror, whatever rumors there are, you know, just don't buy into the Lewandowski to the whole UK thing. Just don't buy it, because he is signed the pre-contract with Bayern. You know, of course, it's highly unofficial, but you know, they both parties agreed on it, and he's leaving for free. And
you know, folks, let it go.
Let go of the
dream. He's not coming to Arsenal.
I've never said or wanted Lewandowski here, because I don't think he's gonna. I don't think he'll ever come to Arsenal or Premier League. I think he'll either go to Munich. Or the Spain, yeah. The thing is about the United situation. I mean, for example, Moyes has got, they bought Zaha in January. Okay, Zaha isn't even getting anything. Like, not even he's playing in the reserves.
Only okay? Moyes' daughter.
Moyes likes Januzaj because of his strength.
Because he's not fucking his daughter?
Maybe that too, okay? Maybe that's an important thing in a managerial decision.
Yeah, where a condom, Jan and Josh, or whatever you call.
Oh, no. I'm talking about, I think Zaha, right, is the rumor is he's been banging Moyes' daughter.
That's the rumor. But yeah, I mean,
like the rumor that Justin Bieber was in the brothel or something.
It wouldn't surprise me either.
Yeah, I don't really follow this whole gossip thing, but when you're on Twitter, you can't really escape it.
Yeah, you can't help it being thrown into your face over and over again. Alex, let's get back to a little bit more about that Arsenal Liverpool match before we move on. I thought Giroud had another splendid performance up front. You know, I've spoken about this. I think he's really established himself as the best center forward in the Premier League since Drogba, in the sense of his actual center forward play as a natural nine. I'm not, you know, we're not talking about strikers here, obviously.
Guys, you know, like Aguero,
Suarez, Van Persie.
But he's actually what he's done so well lately is his back to goal movement.
Yes.
Lewandowski is probably one of the best at the moment, if not the best. But Giroud has really improved because watching him last season, he didn't really try. You know, sometimes maybe it was lack of confidence or so. But now he just gets into the defender and, you know, pushes him away with his back and tries to hold the ball. You know, this is very important if you play with a lone striker. And I think Giroud, besides, you know, scoring more goals now, has done this quite well. And this really helps Arsenal to, you know, get up the pitch.
Yeah, I feel like every match, even when he doesn't score, his contribution is telling. I mean, you look, he didn't score at the weekend, but he was one of our best performers. And you look at precisely his hold-up play, because you look at when you need that outlet and you're playing with a lone striker, like you said, you have to have a man who can hold up the ball. And he wins such a high percentage of those balls. I mean, look at how, you know, Chesney looks for his head on every long clearance. You know, these, it goes right to him. And the majority of the time he wins those, and you don't have many center forwards that are able to do that with such regularity. It's been refreshing, you know, and he's playing like a beast up there. You know, he's adapted to the physicality. I thought he did better than a lot of people give him credit for last season, you know, especially in the beginning. It took him a while to get adjusted to the physicality and all that.
It's
but
because of so many different reasons, the adapting, the comparison to Van Persie, we were a psychologically hurt team last season.
A wounded animal.
Yeah, and we needed time to adapt. And I think we finally got there and everything's going swimmingly.
You know, Lewandowski was called for the first two seasons, basically. Well, he was called a bratwurst by most fans. That was what he was called, because he wasn't impressing anyone at all.
Yeah.
Because it was complete lack of confidence, and Lucas Barros was still far ahead of him, and nobody really believed, me included, you know, never really believed in him. You know, everyone knew Lewandowski has a lot of potential and everything, but, you know, he never had a breakthrough, and he missed a lot of sitters. So now he's, of course, on top and he's a star. But, you know, it took him a while to get there.
We know what confidence can do for a player. I mean, you look at guys, you know, that's one of those things that when I assess a player, you look at – I like to look at how many times they put themselves in the right position, you know. And you see, even when he wasn't scoring, he was getting there. It was a matter of finishing the chances for Lewandowski. And you look at
Same with Ramsey.
Thank you for stealing my comparison, Alex.
Sorry.
I'm just fucking around, man. Yeah.
Well done, Alex.
And then you see guys like Ramsey, who have always gotten in the right positions and weren't able to put it away. Same thing with Suarez. You know, he was still very wasteful with chances last season, but he got so many that he scored. I mean, he's never done very well against Arsenal in any of the matches we played. He's been very wasteful in front of goal, but always finding that dangerous space, you know, being in the right place at the right time is a great indication that if, you know, once they get their shooting boots on, that everything will work out. So, you know, I've always had faith that a few of these players will come good, because that would eventually happen. Yeah, I remember when Lewandowski broke through, right? It was Lucas Barrios was injured in the beginning of the season, right? A couple years ago.
And yeah, he got his extended run.
Yeah, and he got his extended run in the team and started firing him in for fun.
Yeah,
where
it all
ben
started
end up going.
Where's Lucas Barrios right now?
Didn't he go to Asia?
Spartak Moscow. I think.
Oh, he went to Russia.
He's freezing his balls off in Russia.
Yeah, the thing was, he went to Guangzhou Evergrande.
Yeah, he went to China first.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to learn Chinese and likes rice.
And he likes that long dollar. And they pay good money, right?
Yeah, of course. I think they offer it.
It was only 1 year.
8 million. Yeah, but the thing was, China's you maybe don't get paid your salary.
Right.
It's all a bit. It's all a bit corrupt and whatnot. And then he went to a state which is far less corrupt in Russia. And
their neighbors of the north.
Yeah. Well, they have all this nice gas from money or whatever. So I don't know if he's playing regularly. I haven't really followed it.
He's fallen off the world football map.
He's only 28, which is kind of weird, isn't it?
Yeah,
So do you guys bring him back when Lewandowski goes or what? I mean, you're talking about a current theme of bringing back players.
No, his hemis are through, I think. There's just no chance. He just doesn't have the physical capacity to run like hell for Dortmund as you must as a striker. But maybe, as you just said, we need a striker who's good at this back-to-goal movement, you know? Maybe we should snap up Giroud. I mean... just going out all arrogant now here because now we are the big guys and you're not. So things around, because I think 2 years ago I had at least 5 people daily tweeting me how they're going to snap up Götze and whatnot from Arsenal fans. So yeah,
I think that's what it was that turned you on Arsenal. I remember those days and you're just getting tired of everyone fucking tweeting you that shit.
Yeah.
I never wanted Götze, and I'm very, very unhappy with Götze.
Well, here's the thing. Like, you know, to your point, I'm mad at Götze. I can't stand this betrayal. We've been through it with RVP. And after everything, when Lewandowski came out and saying he wanted to go to Bayern, I completely soured to him in that sense. It's like, look, you want to move on to something else, but you're at arguably the best place to play football in Germany.
Somewhere you love.
You're loved. You're the star. You're beloved. Yeah, and if you're gonna leave for another league. You know, if you want to leave to go to play fucking Barcelona, Real Madrid, or even Manchester United or somewhere else, like I understand that more. I mean, I wouldn't understand going to United now, but it makes sense. But why to do this to your fan base? To go to your direct rivals?
The problem with Bayern is that they're kind of shaping up to be the best team in the world. So that's maybe a tiny argument.
Yeah, no, it's a very valid argument, and I get that. But I mean, it's also this is the direct rival of a team that loves you, you know, and all that, and just that will to do that is just something that I don't really respect so much. I mean, I understand you're a professional, you do what's best professionally,
we poor old football romantics, we all get pissed off by that, don't we?
Yeah,
but you know, it's a very good thing. And we just have to be happy that, you know, players like maybe for us, Kevin Großkreutz is sticking around and, you know, running his socks off every week, overperforming, and you know, it's just a great player. You know, he won't be ever as fancy as Götze to be. Even his one bicycle kick goal he scored was the ugliest bicycle goal in the world of history. But that doesn't matter, you know, he's love of his team and teaching new signings like Mkhitaryan or Aubameyang, new Dortmund songs and whatnot, has the silhouette of Dortmund, which isn't that impressive, but he has it tattooed on his calf, or you know,
right.
So that's
the thing. I don't understand about Bayern is why didn't they get a better striker when they sold Gomez? I mean, they have Pizarro, and they have Mandzukic.
Because they got Lewandowski coming in next season.
That's the only reason, right? Because they know Lewandowski is coming.
I suppose so. It seems, right?
It must be. Why would they do that otherwise?
Yeah, I think they thought Lewandowski was coming in this season already, you know, and Dortmund was like, well, yeah, if Götze goes, we can have Lewandowski going as well. And, you know, there was a lot of talk, you know, if it would be the right decision financially to keep Lewandowski, but so far he's banked in 9 goals already in the league. You know, he scored a important goal against Arsenal, so at the moment he's kind of saving our butt scoring wise, and he's performing well and he's very professional. So you get everything you want out of this.
January it might change. He might go for a cut price to Bayern Munich earlier because they might want to destroy your season. I don't know how they think, but they're very.
But why would, if he's going to Bayern, why would you even fucking give it to him? Like, don't even give him that extra month. You know, those extra few months. You know, if you're embroiled in a title bet, you know, if the gap is only a few points at the top of the league, there's zero reason for Dortmund to give him to him 6 months early. You know?
Well, if it means 10 million.
No, fucking 10 million. It's not. I'm sure Stefan will back me up, right? 10 million is not that important in this situation.
It's not to us. It's not to us, but it's to the financial.
No, but I'm talking to Dortmund. I'm talking about Dortmund's situation.
The problem for Dortmund is if you sell your only striker, our second striker is Julian Schieber. And you will probably say, who? Exactly, because he isn't that great, right? So. And Lewandowski is a huge part of our game, and if he isn't there, we will, you know, we still might win games, but not that consistently. So he's a big part of this team, and replacing striker is not so easy, especially in January. You overpay, meaning if you get the 10 million extra, maybe you're gonna overpay 9 million for another striker, which means you get 1 million out of it in the end. So it doesn't matter, and it doesn't make sense.
Who do you think you'll end up with? Like Dzeko? Who do you think you will end up with in a year?
Yeah, Dzeko is maybe a good call, but honest to God, I don't know. And the good thing is, you know, Michael Zorc is the longest sporting director in the league, and maybe in the business, I don't know. And he has got so great contacts, and I just know he's scouting players everywhere over the globe. So maybe it's just completely a no-name striker who will maybe need a half a season or even a whole season to get into gear, but you know, I'd rather see a nice talented player than an established player who we have to throw, I don't know, 40 million on and you know, disrupt our salary structure for. So I agree with you,
but maybe the players who are at Dortmund who might leave will want to stay if you sign a marquee player. Like, because I think that's what's happening, and that's what's going to happen at Arsenal, is that we've changed the waves, you know? We used to have it that players that were near world class will want to leave because they think we're not going to be challenging.
Well, because every time
we bring in a player that's young and needs to adapt, needs to grow.
It's a sign that it's more of a long-term type thing. That
it's a sign that they're not trying to fix things now.
Right.
And that's the only thing I worry for Dortmund. I worry for them. I worry that might happen with them, that they will continue.
Yeah, but the problem is, if you look right now at the striker market, there's just nobody there. There are not so many great strikers on this planet now.
Why don't you buy Suarez? He's not cup-tied.
Yeah, but, you know, what if he buys some?
Like bitey racists in Dortmund? I thought German are into that kinky shit.
Nah, certainly not. There's nothing wrong with a little biting here and there, you know.
Right. Well, let's take the racism aside. The biting's okay, though.
But anyway, you know, Suarez is just he probably won't fit in the nine role. You know, he would be just in our system. Suarez would probably be an offensive midfielder.
Then find Berbatov. Strike. Find Berbatov.
Yeah. Is he still active?
he's somewhat active. I mean, his hairline's receding and he's kind of wasting away at Fulham, but you know, he's doing okay. Well, look, let's get further into that though, in terms of looking at BVB going forward. We have some big news this week, right? Jurgen Klopp has extended his contract to 2018. We've seen Dortmund probably do the best business that I've seen in recent years in terms of replacing outgoing parts with quality. We've seen Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang come in and fit in seamlessly into the system. It's a credit to your, you know, technical director and Klopp in terms of recruiting and scouting the right players for the system. You know, we've seen them come in and just come in and fit in like they've been there forever. You know, tell me a little more about what you think about what you guys have done and, Klopp's new contract and what it means for the club moving forward.
Well, you know, if maybe I should branch out a bit because Klopp was signed to play what we call full throttle football. This is what Klopp was signed for in 2008. He was appointed, and the thing is, Dortmund play very dull and lackluster football, and people here want to see a team on the pitch that gives it all. You know, it just, you know, doesn't, the result isn't so important. What's more important is you watch a team that is always fighting, you know. And Klopp was representing that at the time, because at Mainz, you always had the feeling when you played them, you know, you play against 12 or 13 players. Even though they you know, individually, they weren't as good. But the thing is, for us in Dortmund, how it turns out or turned out is that Klopp, you know, just knows exactly what he wants from a player in every position, because we're playing this, you know, very offensive pressing, and you know, it's very, you know, we outrun basically every opponent, which you know, which is our working rate. But the thing is, Klopp is so brilliant at bringing players in that fit all together. The team chemistry is maybe one of the best out there in our team. You know, it's not only in terms of how the players are in their styles, but also in their character. That means the people, you know, at the club get along very, very well. And the whole team mentality is so high that one runs for another, because I think that's key for us, that one player is really committed to the club and to the idea of football, because you know, sometimes in this very complicated pressing, one step too less, and the whole thing collapses, and space will open up. So you really need players to run. And of course, in a partnership with Michael Zorc, they had to aim low for talented players, for young talented players, because the financials just weren't there. So out of you know, rather forced situations, they made a virtue and you know, had success with it. And the thing is, now the team is in its core together since 2008 or 2009, basically, so 4 or 5 years. And yeah, the team spirit, as I said, is still very high. And for Klopp, you know, extending to 2018, it just means this whole, you know, success, how it has developed, and every player at the club knows how it developed, because they were a part of it. It says to them, okay, you know, you can be a part of exactly that, what happened a bit longer, and they know they're all very young and they're gonna develop even further, and you know, the one who developed them, you know, will be there for longer, which means basically they can have success for a longer time, and have a perspective. That is what it is, basically. They have a perspective, and that means
I'm sure it's reassuring, right? I mean, it's reassuring to, you know, the players obviously hear the reports, right? You know, that every team wanted to sign Klopp before this season. You know, he's a hot commodity on the world managerial market. And you have to, even if you know he's there with you right now, you have to worry. I mean, I'm sure there were plenty of people worried that if not this season, maybe next year or the year after, he might look at pastures anew. Just because of what a hot commodity he's become and how in demand he is. And this has to, like you said, be very reassuring, right? This player, this coach that's developed him.
Well, the thing is, Jürgen Klopp is a very special personality. And he doesn't really go for, you know, he's not the usual footballing businessman you would see in most people. Because He's one who thrives in emotion, and if you look at Dortmund, this is emotion pure. I mean, if you look at the soft stand, people going ballistic there. I mean, what more can you get? And this was maybe one of the reasons he joined Dortmund, even though he had a lot of different offers. And you know, at the moment, it's his project. You know, he wants to establish Dortmund, you know, at the top of Europe's elite. This is basically what he's out there to do, or tries to do. And you know, If you play Football Manager or so, well, I don't know, but I don't play it, but I guess you get some kind of motivation and, you know, bringing up a rather small team up to the top. It's more challenging, and at the moment it's just going, you know, we are not stagnating, you know, we are still improving, even though we're losing key parts, as you just said, because Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang, they just fit better in our system than Götze did, for example. No, and our financial, you know, our sporting success is, of course, bringing our financial success as well. So, you know, long-term-wise, it's just amazing, and this news for Klopp's extension to 2018 is the best news ever for a Dortmund fan, because it just is so reassuring. And knowing Klopp, as I just said, you know, he's the one who honors his contract. He was, I think, 18 or 19 years at Mainz. You know, he's not the one who just leaves for the better. Oh, I don't know.
He's not Mourinho. He doesn't run a club into the ground and ditch.
No. He's just trying to. He's trying to give Dortmund sustainability. This is what he's aiming for, and have a good time while doing so. And he's not the type of guy. But he's not. Yeah, Mourinho was forced out of some clubs too. You know, from Real Madrid, he only left semi-voluntarily. But that's a different story. But Klopp is the one who says, you know, it's maybe the grass isn't greener on the other side. That's what he said. And you know, as a Dortmund supporter, I'm so happy, because he's not a brilliant coach, but he's a great person, and he's very charismatic, and it's so much fun to listening. Just listen to him, and having this guy around who builds a team, you know, who entertains everyone, you know, and who is just Captain Awesome on the sideline, apart from some funny faces, I might add. It's just highly enjoyable, and yeah, but he's a brand of our club as well, you know, which means he brings a lot of money, and his commercial value is going through the roof. You know, if you turn on the television, during every commercial break, you can see his face.
I miss German commercials, man. There's people fucking in Mercedes, and there's football managers and players all over the place. I miss that.
Yeah, we don't have so many stars all over the world. So there's only Sebastian Vettel and Mats Hummels making commercials for Head and Shoulders. That's all there is. No, but I don't know if you've seen the Mentos commercial. You know,
I have not.
No, Marco Reus is there on the training ground and with Kevin Großkreutz, and there's this Mentos package, you know, and Reus is throwing it to Großkreutz, and Großkreutz just says it in the dumbest way you could ever say. You stay the whole halftime cool with it, you know, in just completely dumbfuck voice, you know. Even on a German TV show, they're making fun of him because of this line he says, you know. Mats Hummels just comes out, yeah, well, maybe we should give it to the coach, you know. So they're starting to get creative with our team.
There you go. Well, so when he announced the extension of his contract, he also said that this is a great moment for the club, but there may be some more low points ahead, just in terms of potentially losing players. Looking at players moving forward, and so BVB are looking to extend Marco Reus's contract, I believe, right? And anticipating potential departures. How are we looking on that front, Stefan?
It's not very looking bad, because Reus is so far committing to the club, and they're not exactly extending his contract, because it's running until 2017, but they're trying to poach his buyout clause, which they did with Hummels before, with a buyout clause as well. And they couldn't do this with Götze or Schein, but I think with Reus it's gonna work. And so everyone who's dreaming about Marco Reus in their team,
he sure knows how to play very well with Ozil.
Nah, yeah, at the national team maybe, that's just a concern for the English people, right? So or has there been any World Cup draws? No.
Not yet.
So anyway, I think he's playing much better with Mkhitaryan on the side than with Özil, to be honest. Reus is hopefully staying for a bit longer, and as long as Dortmund can give him a perspective, which at the moment is looking good, he will, you know, accept this offer. And I don't know, but you were going to come on the players who might leave, and we all know Lewandowski is going to go to Bayern. That's a fact. There shouldn't be any discussion if he goes on January or whatnot, because he won't. That's just a fact. How it is, he just will leave at the end of the season to Bayern. But whose contract is also running out in 2015 is Ilkay Gündoğan's, and at the moment, it's not looking great for us that he's extending, because the likes of Barcelona are snooping around, and if you watch Gündoğan, he would just fit right into that side. And, with Xavi and Iniesta and whatnot, they're all getting older and older. And, Gündoğan is maybe planning, playing for Blaugrana in the future. And, as you can hear from my voice, this kind of makes me a bit sad, because last season he was the best player of Borussia Dortmund.
Yeah.
And maybe still would be, so far he has been out for basically the whole season, apart from the first 75 minutes. And right. The Super Cup, where he kicked ass. So it's very sad to see. But maybe he will leave. But I think Dortmund will do the same if he wants to leave, with what they did to with Lewandowski. doesn't matter. Keeping for 1 year might be more valuable than getting cash.
I suppose a silver lining of that is the fact that Shaheen has come back in, and it looks like he's found his old form, and you're likely to exercise your claws to buy him once the loan is over. But the team has still been clicking and playing very well without him in the side. Don't you think that if it were to be, say, someone like Barcelona, and they offered some good cash in the summer, that it'd be worth – it'd be worth cashing in on him as opposed to losing on a free, especially since he's going to a foreign league.
The problem is Borussia Dortmund has done very well at buying players so far, getting players in, but they've done a rotten job on selling players for good money. I think Agabo left for, 17, could have been much more. Götze left, it was a buyout clause, but still 37 million for that talent is still
right.
Way too low, and he had still, I think, just extended until 2016 it was, but he had a good time left on his contract, and should have been at least 50 or 60 million, if you look at the money Barca had to spend for Neymar, and Götze is not really worse than
Neymar. And Gareth Bale's 100 million euros.
Yeah, that just stinks for us, that Götze got away for 37 million.
We know about it. I mean, Cesc Fabregas went back to fucking Barcelona for 30 something million, which is a joke of a price.
I'm thirsty. 22 million.
Yeah. Well, what can you do about
Anyway. What I was going to say, if they were to maybe splash out 40, 50, 60 million on Barca, 40 million, I think Dortmund will say maybe okay to sell it. But I'm not too sure. They're very keen on keeping this team together. And the good part is everyone is on a long contract, except for Gündoğan and Lewandowski. Those are the only two players we have to worry about. And Royce's buyout clause, which will activate in 2015. So for the next season, we should be quite good. We just have to replace a striker, and we will earn a bit more money in the Champions League, whatnot, so we can add a bit more talent. And if Kagawa comes back, we should be, not only on a loan, but permanently, we should really have a good team for the future as well. So yeah, as a Dortmund fan, even if key players go out, the Hummels, Subotic, Sahin, Bender, Schmelzer, Großkreutz, and Piszczek, and all those players, Blaszczykowski, Mkhitaryan has a long contract, Aubameyang is new, whatnot. Those and Jonas Hofmann is a very highly talented player who just extended his contract. So it's the future is bright for us, I would say. So even though if you lose a player, I wouldn't be too pessimistic about our future.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks good. Like you said, it looks like they're able to cope with whatever potential departures well, and it's nice to see a club that's run the correct way, and really going to prosper and learning how to deal and roll with the punches accurately,
even maybe Arsenal and Dortmund both will maybe benefit, highly unlikely because it's FIFA running this shit, but with the financial fair play, highly unlikely because
there's always ways to get around it, right? The fucking oil sheik can have his dad sponsor the club for 400 million, and therefore it makes it okay to spend like an Arab oil sheik, right? So yeah, there is that. Like you said, it looks like Dortmund may need to bring in a striker. I know some people were saying that Aubameyang might be the answer. But like you said, he, similar to Suarez, he's not a hold-up center forward, and you kind of need that role in the system that Dortmund play. But let's move on to the match, the big match midweek. Let's preview this. Dortmund at home against our mighty Arsenal. Long enough. We're doing pretty well.
Wait. Didn't Alex want to say something? I think he wanted to make.
Alex, you had a point that you wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, I was just adding on about basically what Stefan was speaking so romantically about Klopp, you know, about how much he loves the club and how much he's part of it. And as an Arsenal fan, obviously, I feel that way about Arsene Wenger. And people keep, every time we have a bad season or something, people keep touting names. I never think about the name. I don't really care about the name. All I care about is that this person, that the next person who comes to the club, he has all the visions of the past manager, and he has the visions of, for example, like Klopp. I want him to love the club, love the players, this youth system, everything. I want him to know everything about the club, to make it his own. Basically, that he lives through it, and that's what we want as supporters from a manager. You know, we don't want him to come in for 3 years and leave. We don't want him to come in and make his name for someone else.
Well, we've seen where it's gone wrong for others, right? I mean, you look at the situation at Manchester United, and it's, you know, David Moyes isn't bringing world class talent to United, you know, and there's a reason, right?
That's scary.
Well, it's extremely scary because the wrong type of person to bring in, right? I mean, you could argue that, you know, I'm not saying that Mourinho would have been the right decision for them, but if you had brought in a guy like Mourinho at United, he probably would have brought a splash signing or two because based on reputation.
They can't afford it.
Well, they're always willing to leverage their debt, you know. I mean, they'll spend the money. I mean, I think it was pretty clear this season that they just didn't. They lost Sir Alex, which is a huge, huge loss for anyone. And it's, you know, people are skeptical, especially when a guy like David Moyes, who's won nothing, goes in, you know. And you see players, you know, when some of these high-profile managers come in, you know, obviously Guardiola going to Bayern, we've already seen the effect of that. You know, you get fucking Götze to cross enemy lines and jump ship. You know, that's the effect that big managers can have. And a guy like Klopp.
Yeah, Bayern really should have signed David Moyes.
Yes, that would have been much better for Dortmund. I believe.
If Guardiola had gone to United, completely different side.
Oh, we'd be fucked.
Imagine that, Rooney playing like Messi.
Oh no!
If Guardiola would go to United, you know, he had completely exchanged the whole team for except maybe Kagawa, because that's just not, you know, big tall English. I don't know. You know, tough lads, it's just not how Guardiola thinks football. So
Kagawa starts today for United, actually. I think it's because already fucking clear. I mean, they're playing Sociedad and they're resting Van Persie, so motherfucker's keeping him fresh for us on Sunday. But
definitely.
Yeah, how? I'm not going to touch on this wound because I know how much it can hurt. So moving on to the big game.
Moving on to the big game. Let's give I believe I heard your prediction, Stefan, on the Yellow Wall podcast. You were predicting a 3-1 victory to Dortmund. Is that right?
Correct.
Let's hear your justification.
Yeah, well, do you want the short or the long version? Because the short version was we won away and we are the better team.
All right.
But of course, it's not that easy. maybe it is. I think Dortmund at home is still a bit better. And the thing that has changed between the last match between our two sides and now is that our offense actually found into the game because our offense wasn't really clicking back then.
Not
in this game, but we it was more of a thing that we didn't create the chance the chances that were there to create.
Right.
So I know, you know, looking into this game, Arsenal will be maybe a bit more on the back foot than in a home match because now we have to go at them. But then again, Arsenal are still a very possession oriented side, and we can still, you know, hit them on a counter attack or at the transition attack, because, you know, a counter attack is often, you know, attack from very, you know, deep up the field. But I think the match now won't be so differently from the first leg. It's just that Dortmund will probably have a bit more control in this game, and Arsenal will track back a bit more. If you remember the game in 2010, I think it was rather similar. That Dortmund in the home game
got their ass saved by a last minute equalizer, I believe.
Yeah, but it was Perisic who scored
Perisic,
amazing golazo. But the point is, you know, if it was Kagawa and Götze wasting like 3 or 5 chances before, just 3 on the goalkeeper. Yeah. And then Sebastian Kehl, the most experienced guy in the team, just passed it to Van Persie.
Oh, yeah, that was...
Yeah, it was just, you know, that was our first Champions League season in a nutshell. You know, all this effort
Growing pains.
And then just... Yeah, but in the end, we learn from it, and now it was funny after the game. You know, it was talked about how Arsenal were a bit too naive and should have sat on the 1-1 and you know, got exposed in the end. And Dortmund was so professional when two years back it was completely the opposite. You know, Dortmund's first Champions League season and a very young team, unexperienced. You know, trying to play Champions League football like it's a regular Bundesliga game.
Right.
I
remember that season, how many open Bundesliga matches there were. I can't remember which one it was. I remember watching. There were so many fucking entertaining Dortmund matches that season. Just because, I remember, like, you know, I can't remember who the fuck it was against. But, you know, like 4-2, 4-3s, big, high-scoring, crazy matches with crazy momentum. But, yeah, it's a little naive to try to play a Champions League match that way. I think both sides are significantly better than they were 2 seasons ago. You know, whether it be through experience. I mean, I know we don't have Van Persie, but the team as a whole is actually relatively intact. From the team that you played 2 seasons ago, it's relatively intact with a few additions and strengthening, as well as a significant more experience. Alex, what do you think about Arsenal? And, it's, you know, considering our road form as well, is how we're going to look midweek?
We play a lot better away. In the Champions League, I think we're going to do what Dortmund did to us at the Emirates. We're going to sit back, try to control the game. I don't know if we will. I think we'll try to control the entire game, and I think it will be an equal game. I think we'll share possession. I think maybe it'll go 54% to Dortmund, something like that. And if we get chances, we just have to put them away. I think if we do, we can draw, maybe win. If we don't, we'll be lucky to get a draw, or we'll probably lose. But I expect a big game from Mertesacker and a big game from Koscielny, you know, and obviously Monreal. If those three can contain, then we have a decent chance. I'm not really worried about our attack as much, because we're used to now, even if Giroud doesn't put away his chances, we have Ramsey, Cazorla, Ozil, even Rzyski, like, they can put in a good shift. So,
I think the big key point for Arsenal will be Cazorla in this side, because you know, Dortmund is a team that you know, defines themselves over pressing, and when he came in, Cazorla was the first guy to bring in Özil into the game, because Özil was sitting the whole time in Banner's pocket, but suddenly there was another guy to really, you know, who needed real good attention, and Cazorla, the little Spanish midget there, you know, like all these Spaniards are, well, not all, but many of them, he's highly resistant to pressing, which means,
well, he's,
you know,
got,
closing,
he's got ridiculous technical ability in tight spaces.
And he should be the guy for Arsenal who should create the most chances, you know. I think our right side, Subotic and Großkreutz and Benner, who will form the triangle against him, you know, will be, you know, always, you know, and even Błaszczykowski or Aubameyang, who will play on the side, and will always have an eye on him. And this will open up space for Özil, because, you know, Dortmund was so good at, you know, nullifying Özil basically in the games against Madrid, and Klopp more or less done it again with Sven Bender and Schein and Hummels, and, you know, this triangle to nullify Özil again in the first leg, because he was, you know, let's be honest, he wasn't really doing any magic. And, you know, until Cazorla came in, and there was a bit more space for Özil on the right side, and he could, you know, pass it to players who made a run behind Schmelzer, for example, like Sagnar or so. You know, in the end, this was maybe the reason why Arsenal got exposed, because Sagnar was trying to run up the pitch and getting the overlap by Özil, maybe, and yeah. Then we had this...
Sagnar, that's my point. I mean, Sagnar was... We were really trying to get that second, trying to win that game, you know. And Sagna completely left the entire right flank open. We had no one there.
But that's on midfielders to stop, you know, to get back in position. It's not
true that nobody was there, because as I posted on the internet, you know, a picture of the lack of backtracking of Arsenal, was Özil was there and Musitski was there, and they were both just, you know, trotting backwards while Lewandowski was sprinting forwards, and, you know, and I think even Arteta could have moved up again and stopped the whole attack, but he didn't. So space was completely open for us, and this one brilliant cross by Kevin Grosskreutz completely exposed Arsenal. But you know, they could have easily stopped this attack by Özil or Rosicki, or I don't know who it was. Yeah, I think it was Rosicki who was even in a better position than Özil, just to track yeah. But the problem with Özil and Rosicki is they're both not the fittest players when it comes to the full 90 minutes, right. And they wear out. You know, I've seen this for Germany with Özil. I've seen it in at Madrid, and you know, it's just he isn't the fittest player, and he isn't willing to make this extra run to commit to defense. It's just not his game.
He doesn't have an engine like Ramsey. He's not going to run. He's not going to sprint across the pitch for 90 minutes. And he seems to be. It's interesting because, you know, with Ozil, it seems like he drifts in and out of matches more. He doesn't. He's not the kind of guy who takes over a match, but he'll have moments of brilliance. I think it's going to be really key for us, especially after. I just have that feeling after a subpar performance from Ozil at the weekend that he's going to bounce back. You know, he is a big time player. You know, he is a star for Germany. He's one of the top number 10s in the world. And he really showed something against Napoli at home. He scored that goal in the Champions League, but he is a man for the big occasion. He doesn't shy from the spotlight. And I think the difference will be in terms of whether or not Arsenal can be successful will hinge on that creative duo of Santi Cazorla and Ozil, because with both of them involved, it certainly will help free up one or the other to make something happen.
Or Ramsey. I mean, it's really, really strange how we feel about, like, we're so used to Cazorla saving us, or we're so used to depending on Ozil. We don't even really depend on Ramsey. He's just like a special extra, like, comes in.
Well, you know, but I mean, he's going to be so important in a match like this. I mean, like you said, he is the guy with the engine who will run all over the pitch, you know, for the entire 90.
Ramsey might not be able to get an attack. He might have to be very disciplined the whole game.
I think he might have to be a little more limited, just because, you know, needs must, right? Alex, give me a prediction. So since we've had a 3-1 prediction from Stefan.
Oh, you know, it could go either way.
This is the podcast, man. I need a fucking prediction. You can bask in glory.
I'm going to go 1-1.
All right.
Yeah, well, Joaquin, it's all on you, you know.
It's on me. I'm going to go with a 2-2 draw. 2-2. Yeah.
Ah, that's so fucking boring. I expected a win at least from you guys.
Yeah.
Don't use that whole reverse psychology fucking bullshit on me.
We were humble. We were humble.
You know what? Fuck that. All right. An Arsenal winner late.
2-1 Arsenal.
We sit here, three guys saying, oh, well, this game can go either way, and then we predict a win for Dortmund or a draw and no win for Arsenal. What the fuck?
Come on. Hey, point respected. I'll go with, you know, maybe it'll be... No, fuck that. I'm going to go 2-0 Arsenal.
There's no way.
That's insane. I'll give a prediction for the score that I want to see. I want to see a 3-2 Arsenal. I want a 5-goal thriller.
Yeah, this is a prediction I gave for the first game.
A goal for Kuba, one for Lewandowski, and Ozil, Giroud, and Ramsey.
I want to see Aubameyang going behind Matisaka.
I do not want to see that at all. Keep him away from Mertesacker, all right? He can play against Gibbs or Sanya. Just don't.
We put Royce on Matisaka again because he's so much slower.
How happy are you that Theo Walcott's not playing?
Actually, not because he's easier to defend for us.
Well, he's not as tricky, but he's certainly more pacey. We're lacking a bit of pace.
Well, in this game, maybe actually it is good for us because we will probably play with a high back line as well. Uh-huh. So this game will be all about dings, over the top of the defense. If Arsenal play a high line, they're going to get exposed like Scott did. I would watch out. And, the funny thing is Mkhitaryan is fucking quick.
He's the fastest Armenian I've ever seen. There's a lot of Armenians out here right near Glendale, and I've never seen him move as quickly as that guy.
Yeah, it's funny because if you look at him, you don't expect it.
No.
He just really showed the first time in the derby against Schalke, where he ran for 60 meters, overtaking Schalke players, dodging tackles and whatnot, as if he would play American football with the ball on his feet, and so then has the time and the sense to pick out a pass to set up the goal. It was just brilliant to see. And then it hit me that it was all along Klopp's idea to go for pace. If you look at our attacking four with Lewandowski, Royce, Mkhitaryan, Kuba or Aubameyang, either way, they are all four very pacey players, and they are the opposite of the whole Bayern idea. The Bayern idea is possession and trying to walk it in, basically. And our idea is to get behind their defense and break with pace once you get the ball.
It's thrash metal, right? It reminds me of maybe a little Slayer or some Metallica, Kill 'Em All, some high-paced shit. Maybe shit I like to listen to when I'm snowboarding.
Yeah, the idea is our attack works best against sides that like to have possession. And Arsenal is one of this team.
We've shown a penchant to be able to work a little bit better on the counterattack. Obviously, bringing a guy like Ozil, who is quite adept at that, certainly helps facilitate that. And we've been able to, more so than in the past few years, actually transition to working on the break. And that actually, I agree with you guys, Dortmund will have more possession in this match, and that actually could play into Arsenal's.
I can bet on that Dortmund will maybe have 48, 49% maximum. I still think Arsenal will top on possession. That's not uncommon for Dortmund, Yeah. It's just the quality possession that Dortmund has will increase.
Right.
Not the percentage as itself. What was our position? Yeah?
Arsenal in away games, we have less possession. We're playing a quality team, but we tend to have less possession. But we tend to be the quality team. Is that Loki?
Well, either way, I still think we are happy without the ball. Is everything okay, Joaquin?
It's good.
Yeah.
Other than my dog going crazy.
Ah, that's your dog. I thought you were breathing into the microphone.
Sorry, I got a little heated before these.
Basically, we do tend to have 48-47% possession when we play big teams away in Europe, because we tend to try to hold back, try to learn what they're doing before we beat them on the counter, especially of late. So I really hope we do to Dortmund what they did to us. That's what I want us to do. Because then you have wing play, which we don't have now. We're relying on Cazorla and we're relying on Rzyski. So my hope is that we keep possession well and we frustrate you and we try to draw a goal from that. That's what I hope we'll do.
The problem is Dortmund doesn't do frustration because they're highly trained mentality.
They are trained to know better.
They're trained to not get frustrated because You know, the teams, when they play against, for example, they have the tendency to get frustrated. And there are a few teams in the league, like, for example, Freiburg. This is the best example. They just don't get frustrated. You know, you've seen it in the game maybe between Bayern and Manchester City, where Bayern just passed it around, and at some point Manchester City just stopped following it and you know, conceded a goal. And this will never happen with Dortmund. They just keep on running. No, they don't even think about it anymore. They just do. So yeah, not much frustration in there. And yeah, as I said, maybe it's usually against the big teams with more possession or not. But you know, even if Dortmund has more possession, it's not a bad thing. So yeah, but so maybe
it all depends on how we execute, right? Well, we're
It might be that's a very open game. It might be that we're both playing like true to our philosophies, you know.
Yeah, which would be a bit different from what we saw in the first leg. You know, I think I think just in terms of knowing the way both teams play, just see a more open match. I think, you know, Arsenal are not afraid to open and play on the road.
There was a lot of respect in the first 45 minutes of the last game.
Very much so. It was a cagey affair, to say the least.
Well, Jürgen Klopp said on Dortmund TV, this little premium thingy, that it's hard to push away the role of the favorite for this one, because Jürgen Klopp, you know, he loves the underdog role. So and this game and the team as favorites to win. So this is maybe also how they will approach it, as favorites and not so sitting back too much, but trying to be the active one in this game. And if Arsenal, as you just said, try to be passive, you know, this might work out for them. Because Dortmund is, you know, we have, I don't know if you ever played something like World of Warcraft. I did when I was, I don't know, 16 or so, for a bit. And you talent trees in this game, and you know, Dortmund is a bit in the same. You know, our talent tree in the game without the ball, so to say, is much better than you know, how we developed our game with the ball, you know, in actually having more possession. That's a bit different, you know, making the play and creating chances, because usually our game is to exploit this. Sorry?
Built to hit on the break, you know, that counter-attacking transitional football.
It's built to exploit space, so to say, and if the opponent is passive and not allowing you any space, there's none to exploit. So you have to create the space. It's a whole different thing. And for Dortmund, this is the difference in this category. But then again, you know, we have improved.
But one thing that I'm sure of is we're going to get a very exciting match. It's certainly the marquee match of the week. Fuck Juve Madrid. We got the real shit right here. You want to see some champagne football? Watch the Arsenal versus Dortmund. But I suppose if you're listening to this, you would be watching that match. So that's a bit redundant. But it'll be an exciting match. Thank you so much, Stefan, for joining me on the Pintcast. You can follow Stefan on Twitter at BVBAwesome. You can check out...
Yeah, I'm also very grateful to join as Egoist.
And you can check him out on the Yellow Wall podcast. What is the website for the Yellow Wall podcast?
It's on yellowwallpod.com, I think. And you can also find us on Facebook and Twitter, of course.
There you go. Check it
Twitter out. Twitter handle is at yellowwallpod. So, yeah.
Cool. Thank you, Alex, for joining. You follow Alex on Twitter at @the_Beck_. A heated match to follow midweek. And couldn't be more excited. Thank you, gentlemen. It's been a pleasure.
Yes.
Catch you guys later. Just a man in the back.
night.